Mr. President, you've lost control of large areas of Syria. The jihadist group that calls itself Islamic State has emerged. There are perhaps 200,000 Syrians dead. Millions have lost their homes. The UN envoy, Stephane de Mistura, has called this the most serious humanitarian crisis in the world since the Second World War. Has Syria become a failed state?
No, as long as the government and the state institutions fulfilling its duty toward the Syrian people, you cannot talk about failed states. Talking about losing control is something completely different. It's like if you have invasion of terrorists coming from abroad, and the government is doing its job in fighting and defending its country.
Can we briefly go back to when all this started in 2011? Mm-hmm. You've said that there were mistakes made in the handling of those early demonstrations. Did you make mistakes yourself?
No, I never said we made mistakes in handling this. I always said that anyone could make mistakes, but there's difference between...
Did you make mistakes?
There's difference between talking about or asking your question about policies and about practice. There's a big difference. If you want to go back to policies, we took the decision to fight terrorism from the very beginning. We took the decision to make dialogue on national level, and I think both policies are correct. While if you want to talk about mistakes in practice and mistakes committed towards some civilians, that happened from time to time, and some people were punished for these mistakes.
But you didn't make mistakes personally in your handling of the crisis.
I said every person do mistake every day. Otherwise, if you deny the mistakes, we deny the human nature of the people.
You've talked about the influence of terrorism, as you call it, from the very beginning. But I was able, as a reporter, to go to some of those early demonstrations inside Damascus, in areas outside as well. Mm-hmm. And people there were not saying they wanted an Islamic caliphate. Mm. They were saying they wanted freedom, democracy, not some kind of the kind of vision that IS have now mm-hmm. for the country. Do you think you got it wrong?
You in the West called it that time, and some still talk about that period as peaceful demonstration period. And I will tell you that during the first few weeks, many policemen were killed, shot dead. I don't think they were shot dead and killed by the sound waves of the demonstrators. So it was just a fantasy to talk about this. We have to talk about facts. From the very beginning, the demonstrations weren't peaceful. Some who joined those demonstrations, they want the democracy, that's true, but that's not the general case. This is first. Second, you're talking about 140, the highest number of demonstrations in one day. All over Syria, 140,000. Let's make it 1 million. Let's say I'm minimizing the number. I'm not, but let's say that. Make them 1 million. 1 million for 24 million Syrians is nothing.
Now, in 2012, I was in Douma, which is a suburb of Damascus, as you know, which has been held by armed rebel groups. Mm-hmm. And I spoke to a man there who said he'd defected from the Syrian army, and this is the quote. He said, "I've escaped because I can't see my people, my Syrian family, being killed at our hands." And he meant the hands of the Syrian armed forces. Mm-hmm. Do you think that some of the activities of the Syrian army help create the nightmare that Syria is in right now?
If you're talking about the conflict taking the military shape, any war is a bad war. And in any war, you have civilian casualties. That's why every war is bad war. So you cannot talk about a war, benign war, without casualties. That could have happened, but it's not policy. When you talk about governments, you talk about policy. What the decision that we make on political level, as I said, fighting terrorism, defending the civilians, we are defending the civilians, and make a dialogue. And if we were the one who killed our people, as they say, how could we withstand 4 years while the people are against us, supposedly, and the West and the regional countries, and I spent 4 years in my position with the government, with the army, with the institution, without public support? That's impossible. That's mentally unpalatable.
When you talk about terrorism versus what you represent, mm-hmm. You know the accusation that has been made, that you have concentrated your forces in recent years against the non-jihadist parts of the armed resistance, the armed opposition to you, and that you have tried to give Syrians essentially a false choice between you and between the likes of Al-Qaeda and Islamic State by trying to eliminate the middle ground. Perhaps it's worked well as a political tactic, hasn't it? Was that your idea?
Anyway, Obama answered your question when he said a few months ago that waiting for, or depending on what they called the so-called moderate opposition, was a fantasy. It was only pipetry. This is the reality. So if I want to
They're still trying to build up what they call this moderate opposition, aren't they? But this time to fight against Islamic State.
But they said it's a fantasy. He said it's a fantasy. We all know it's a fantasy. Even in the Western media now, they are talking about the ISIS and al-Nusra and al-Qaeda affiliates, organizations and groups prevailing the ground. It doesn't happen suddenly. It's illogical, unrealistic to have suddenly shift from moderate to extremist. You have the same grassroots.
I've met some of those fighters, and they've said to me explicitly, we are not extremists, we are not Al-Qaeda, we are not ISIS. They've said, if Islamic State came here, they'd kill us. I met one group last year, actually in Damascus, who said, we'd like a country a bit more like Malaysia or Turkey. I mean, that is not jihadist, that's not dangerous, is it?
Why did the so-called moderate opposition evaporate? That's the question. If you have answers to that question...
Some say that's because you've attacked them, because you've killed them.
Why didn't we attack the extremists, like ISIS and Al-Qaeda?
That's my question.
Ah, okay. So we
have you attacked them in the same force?
You can say that the government and the president is shooting themselves in the foot. We ask the ISIS and the Al-Nusra to attack our military base, to kill our soldiers, to kidnap our supporters in order to eliminate the moderate opposition. Is that realistic? Nobody can accept it.
I've spent time on the front line with soldiers from the Syrian army who insisted that they were patriotic, that they were patriots. Mm-hmm. They weren't cold-blooded killers. But I've also interviewed people, and so have many other journalists and human rights people and so on, who say that they have suffered badly at the hands of Syrian soldiers. They can't all have been lying, surely.
How surely? Why are you sure?
Well, because the weight of testimony, Human Rights Watch, for example, 30th of January this year, has said that forces loyal to Bashar al-Assad, quote, have deliberately and viciously attacked civilians in opposition-held areas using indiscriminate weapons, notoriously barrel bombs.
This is a childish story that keep repeating in the West.
It's childish.
Childish. Why? Again, if somebody who's against his people and again the regional power and the great powers in the West and survive, how? If you kill the Syrian people, they support you or they become against you. As long as you have the public support, it means you are defending the people. If you kill the people, they will be against you. That's common logic, common sense.
What about barrel bombs? You don't deny that your forces use them.
I know about the army. They use bullets, missiles, and bombs. I haven't heard of army using barrels or maybe cooking pots.
Large barrels full of explosives and projectiles which are dropped from helicopters and explode with devastating effect. There's been a lot of testimony about these things.
They're called bombs. We have bombs, missiles, and bullets.
So you would, but you wouldn't deny that included under the category of bombs are these barrel bombs, which are indiscriminate weapons.
No, there's no indiscriminate weapons. When you shoot, you aim. And when you shoot, when you aim at terrorists in order to protect civilians. Again, if you're talking about casualty, that's war. You cannot have war without casualty.
There are always casualties in war, and civilians die as well, but it is the responsibility under international humanitarian law for belligerents on both sides to do everything they can to protect civilians. And the accusation against the Syrian army is that by using barrel bombs, indiscriminate weapons, and Stephane de Mistura, again, the UN envoy, he's talked about the constant fear of barrel bombs, means that you are not respecting humanitarian law by protecting your own people. What do you say to that?
First of all, we've been attacked in Damascus and in Aleppo. We've been attacked by the rebels, not vice versa. They've been attacking the Syrians with mortars. So you have to retaliate and defend your people. That's self-evident. Second, again, you are talking about somebody or government who's killing its people and the people supporting the government. This is contradiction. There's no logic in it.
Of course,
that's the answer. How can you have support and kill the people at the same time?
Of course, you have many supporters among part of the Syrian population, but in areas held by the rebels, the accusation is your people have used indiscriminate weapons, which they may well have attacked places where there are armed rebels, but because there are civilians there as well, the civilians have also died. Mm-hmm. And if you used less indiscriminate weapons, like barrel bombs, then this kind of thing would not be happening.
During the war, you can have any kind of recrimination, any kind of allegations. Every party could blame the other one. But you have to talk about the reality. The family of those fighters, they came to the government in order to have refuge, not vice versa. You can go now and see where they live and who take care of them. If we would kill civilians, civilians should have fled to the other side, not to come to us,
now,
the government side.
If you stopped barrel bombing, and it does happen, would you not help your own case internationally? There are people now who are saying that you are a potential partner in the fight against Islamic State and that you could be part of the solution, not part of the problem. And it would be quite an easy thing, wouldn't it, simply to order your generals, you say, look, no more of these attacks. And that would no doubt improve your international standing, would it not?
So the first part of your question is about asking us to stop fulfilling our duty in defending our people against the terrorists.
So that's legitimate use of force?
Of course.
Including barrel bombs?
There's no barrel bomb.
There's no barrel bombs at all?
We don't have barrels. Again, it's like talking about cooking pots. So we don't have cooking pots. We only have, like any regular army, we have bombs, we have missiles, we have bullets, and etc. You know what every army has.
You've given up your chemical weapons arsenal. But as you know, that there this last week, the international organization which disposed of the weapons, the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, condemned the use of chlorine gas here in Syria, saying with a high degree of confidence it was used last summer, not blaming any side, but saying that at the same time as these attacks, 32 out of 37 people interviewed said they'd heard or seen helicopters near the village. Now, the armed groups, the rebels, don't have helicopters. Your side has helicopters. Have they been using chlorine gas to attack?
Chlorine gas existed in any factory, in any house in Syria, anywhere in the world. It's not a military material.
But it can be militarized.
Anything can be militarized. This is first.
Is chlorine gas being militarized?
Second, if you want to use gas as a WMD, you have to talk about thousands and maybe tens of thousands of victims in a few hours. That didn't happen in Syria. Third, we could, with our ordinary armaments...
It did happen last summer, August of the previous year, 2013, of course.
Who verified who threw those gas on who? Who verified the
number?
Your
side didn't do that attack.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. We were close to the degree that we could affect ourselves, first. Second, the number of the victims weren't as they exaggerated in the media. So it's not the WMD, it's not about gas. It's something we don't know what is it, because we don't exist in that region.
So you're not using chlorine gas?
No, definitely.
On the fight against Islamic State and Al-Qaeda, the US and others have said you cannot be a partner in that fight. Would you like to be a partner? Would you like to join the coalition?
Partner with who?
Partner with the countries that are attacking Islamic State at the moment.
Do you mean the alliance?
The Jordanians?
No, definitely we cannot, and we don't have the will, and we don't want, for one simple reason, because we cannot be alliance with a country who support the terrorism. Because we are fighting the terrorism. Those countries who consist the alliance, mainly, most of them, support the terrorists.
You've been very harsh in your criticism of the Saudis. Now, the Saudis say they are against Islamic State. They're frightened of Islamic State because Islamic State do not want a royal family in Saudi Arabia. So isn't it logical that they want them out? Why would they support them?
First of all, the source of this Islamic State ideology and other Al-Qaeda affiliates groups are the Wahhabi that's been supported by the royal family in Saudi Arabia. So just to say that we do and we don't, it doesn't matter. It's what you do, what the action that you are taking in order to prove that what you are saying is correct.
So you're saying then that the Saudis bear a high degree of responsibility for the emergence of these ideologies and of these armed groups?
Definitely. Definitely. There's no question.
Why have they rounded up and imprisoned so many Al-Qaeda sympathizers inside Saudi Arabia itself?
I think they think that once it's going to be their turn, because the society in that kingdom is more inclined to be a Daesh and to accept such ideology,
Islamic State.
That's why.
Let's talk about American attitudes. Your departure from office is still official American policy, but there are signs that they are softening. Secretary of State John Kerry recently said that instead of saying, he said that you should change your policies. It's time for President Assad to put the people first, think about the consequences. So is that a lifeline that he's offering? Is he softening in his attitude? Do you believe that you are now being seen as part of the solution?
First of all, we don't breathe through the Americans. We only breathe through our citizens. That's how we breathe. This is first. So it's not a lifeline for us. Second, depends on what he means by changing what he said with the word behavior.
Put the people first, think about the consequences of their actions.
Yeah, okay.
This is seen as a softening because in the past they've said, first of all, so, Assad must go.
Yeah. So second, it depends on what Kerry meant by his statement, or any other official. It's not only about him as a person. Whatever they say doesn't mean for us to be puppets. Whatever they say about for us is about
defending,
to be independent, to work for our interest, to work for the common interest of others, but we'll never be puppets who work against their interest for their interest.
I have to ask them
what they meant by this statement.
But you must surely, I mean, Syria has been very isolated. You're under sanctions here. People can't use credit cards. You've been cut off from a lot of the commerce of the world. I mean, you must surely welcome a situation which might get you back into the family of nations in a way that you haven't been since 2011.
We're not against cooperation with any country. We will never be. We didn't start this conflict with the others. They started. They supported the terrorists. They gave them the umbrella. It's not about isolating Syria now. It's about embargo on the Syrian population, on the Syrian citizens. It's different from isolation. It's completely different.
Do you talk to the Americans? There are American planes in the air above Syria the whole time. Do you coordinate?
No, because they don't talk to anyone unless he's a puppet. And they easily trample over the international law, which is about our sovereignty now. So they don't talk to us, we don't talk to them.
But I'm curious that at a time when there's the American military in the air above Syria, and your people are in the air, your air force is also in the Syrian air force is in the air above Syria, that there haven't been any incidents between the two. No shots seem to have been traded. No planes have been shot down. That suggests to me, surely, someone's talking to someone here.
That's correct. But again, there's no direct cooperation or link.
Direct? Is it via Iraq? That's what some people have said.
That's true. Through a third party, more than one party, Iraq and other countries. Sometimes they convey message, general message, but there's nothing tactical.
So they don't tell you, we're going to be bombing at Raqqa at 10 o'clock this evening, please keep out of the way.
We knew about the campaign before it started, but we didn't know about the details.
And is that a continuing dialogue that you have through third parties?
There's no dialogue. There's, let's say, information, but not dialogue.
They tell you things?
Something like this.
Do you tell them things?
No.
And apart from Iraq, when we do something in our territory,
we don't ask anyone, we don't tell anyone. We just do it.
You don't say, look, if you see Syrian helicopters over a certain area at this hour, don't shoot them down.
No, that's what I meant. There's no tactical cooperation or through third-party cooperation.
Does the bombing of IS benefit your government? Chuck Hagel, the former U.S. Defense Secretary, certainly said that the bombing benefited you, and he resigned shortly after he said that. Do you feel safer as a result of the fact that the Americans are helping you take care of your enemies?
But that question is contradicting with the first question when you said that we were supporting ISIS in order to get rid of the moderate. If we are against ISIS, we don't support ISIS. So this question is more realistic that, yes, it will have some benefits, but if it was more serious and more effective and more efficient, it's not that much.
Can we talk about the humanitarian situation a little bit? One of the effective military tactics the Syrian army has used is to isolate areas held by rebels and effectively to starve them out. But that has had the effect also of starving civilians. And that, again, is against the laws of war, starving civilians.
That's not correct for one reason, because in most of the areas where the rebels take over, the civilians fled and come to our areas, very simply. So in most of the areas that we encircle and attack are only filled with militants.
That they may have come to your areas, not because they want to come, but because their areas are being heavily bombed. I've been in some of the suburbs of Damascus, which are a huge contrast to here in the center, where there's sometimes rubble, 20 meters high.
No,
and no wonder people would want to get out of those places.
That's not realistic for one reason, because the natural reaction of any person, of the people, of the families, of the population, is to flee from any area where they expect a conflict. That's why they fled that area, because they expect fighting between the army and the militants. They fled that area, and they come to the government.
It is the case, though, that your government has restricted the supply of medicines to rebel-held areas.
No.
The Elizabeth Hoff, Syria representative of the World Health Organization, said at the end of last year that the government is restricting what is sent to rebel-held areas. Do you accept that that is a problem for the civilians who are still in those areas?
You know that the northern city of Al-Raqqa, that's been taken over by al-Nusra first, then later ISIS. You know that.
Yeah.
You know that till this moment we still send them food and medicals and everything. So how can we do it for any other area in Syria?
Valerie Amos, who's the UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs, said in a statement to the Security Council in January of this year that she criticized very harshly what Islamic State and others are doing. But she also said the government's failing. She said, for example, last year there were 16 requests for convoys, aid convoys, into eastern Ghouta near Damascus. Only 4 were carried out. The other 12 requests were, quote, unanswered, denied, or subject to conditions that could not be accommodated. Mm. And so for them, that adds up to the Syrian government blocking aid convoys to civilians in those areas.
The same areas are shelling Damascus every day. The same area that he's talking about. How can we prevent them from food and we cannot prevent them from having armaments?
So what are you saying, that they should bring in food themselves rather than just shells?
No, I mean, if we can prevent the food from accessing those areas, can't we prevent the armaments from accessing the same areas? How can we allow the armaments to cross?
I don't know how you run the war, but what I'm saying, the UN is saying
that
convoys are not getting in there.
I'm just putting you the contradiction in their statements, just to know. If you can prevent food from accessing, you can prevent armament. And definitely the priority for us as government is to prevent the armament from crossing.
So if civilians suffer as a result of the lack of these convoys, that for you is unavoidable collateral damage?
No. We are talking about unrealistic, unobjective statements. We cannot discuss it as fact. You know, this is part of the propaganda against Syria for the last 4 years. So whatever Amos or any other official or any organization say something against us doesn't mean it's real. We have to verify what they say. And is it part of the propaganda? Is it politicized or what?
Do you see yourself as the great survivor now of Middle Eastern leaders? President Obama called for you to step down as early as 2011. 2013, there were lots of reports that you'd fled to a Russian warship in the Mediterranean, but you're still here. Your family are still here. Do you think that, looking back on it, that you've had a lucky escape?
No, for one reason, because it wasn't about me to be survival. It was about Syria. It was about terrorism. It was about changing its state and president, because they don't like those state or their president. They don't like their policies. That's what it's about. It's not personalized problem. They want to personalize it, to link everything to the president.
But what a price to pay. Syria's in ruins. There are hundreds of thousands of people dead. You've been the commander. You must bear command responsibility for some of that.
Yeah. According to the constitution and according to the ethics of your job, is to prevent your country when it's under attack, not to fled and run away. And that's what we've been doing.
I spoke to a teacher who'd come from Kabun, which is an area which has been held by the rebels, after her school was hit, and she said, by shelling coming from the Syrian army side. And she said, it's the president's responsibility to keep children out of this war. It's okay for him to fight the terrorists, but what have children done to deserve this? They don't have weapons. He needs, both sides, she said, but he said, he needs to shop to stop shelling the schools. What is your message to her?
What the aim of shelling schools, realistically? Why do a government shell a school? What do we gain?
Have you shelled schools?
Why? No, definitely why? Because if you don't have interest, put aside the duty, put aside the morals of the issue. Talk realistically. What the aim of any army to shell a school?
Do you deny anything that has happened?
The government is going to pay to rebuild these schools. We are paying to maintain the destroyed schools. How can we shell schools? Why do you want to kill students and children? What do we get?
That teacher had the wrong idea.
Again, it's different between having casualties during the war, because that's a war, and every war in the world has these side effects, and between aiming at school. That's a big difference. There's no way to aim at school.
What keeps you awake at night?
What keeps me awake at night? Many reasons that could affect any human life. Could be personal, could be your work.
Your job?
Could be your job, could be personal. Like any, I'm a human. What could any human be affected by? I would be affected with the same factors.
Have you thought about those casualties and felt or understood the pain of the families and of the people wounded and killed and injured?
The system is something we live in every day, whether they are from opposition, from other side, or whether they are supporters. You live with it. So we are human. We live with the casualties, with the death issues on a daily basis. They are family who love their dear ones. I lost members of my families. I lost friends. I lost people I work with. It's something we live every day with in pain.
President Assad, thank you very much.
Thank you for you.